Welcome to the Coaching DNA Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Wyckoff. I'm also the founder of Kingdom Coaching, my consulting business in which I coach leaders. This is part two of my conversation with Josh Brooks. Josh is the AD at the University of Georgia. During part two, we discuss staff development and rhythms, the culture of this executive team, the cadence of meeting with coaches, the hiring process for head coaches, and much, much more. Josh oversees one of the most successful athletic departments in the country and is really sharp and just exudes a ton of humility. So without further ado, my conversation with Josh Brooks.
Would love to dive into some staff leadership, staff management. First, I would ask how many are on your executive team? And then would love to hear about your rhythms. Do you guys meet weekly? What are those meetings like? How do you manage, lead your staff?
Yeah. So I've got an exec team of five, including me at six. And we meet generally once a week. And then, you know, I've got constant interaction with these five, you know, almost daily. But we have a core, probably 2-hour meeting every Wednesday morning. If we have a big topic, we'll set that we know that if there's something starting to happen in that meeting that needs its own meeting, we'll schedule a separate meeting. Because sometimes, you know, whatever the topic of the day, that something could start just bleeding in and taking over that meeting. They're like, all right, we need to set a separate meeting for this. I would hope that my staff would echo this, but I try to really be a leader that is open to debate, that's open to healthy conflict, who's open to someone telling me you're wrong. I don't believe that changing my mind is a weakness. I want to encourage them to change my mind. I don't have it all figured out. I've got really great people in the room that, like I said, are all better at what they do than I am. So I've got to take their information to heart because they, you know, and they know me. So I really try to promote an atmosphere where we're going to be open and say everything, but they also know that I'm an external processor. I've got a couple people that are internal processors. So I'm going to say a lot of my ideas out loud and have an open debate. And some people may be a little bit more reserved and I try to pull it out of them. But we really, it's a collaborative spirit because, and I really, not to sound corny, but I really like the people in that room too. I enjoy being around them. So, It's a fun meeting, and I try to inject humor because, again, we work way too many hours and deal with too much stuff not to have a little fun. Yeah. I always tell our staff, this is just sports. You know what I mean? Like, don't take some of these things too seriously. And we had a topic we met last week, and it didn't get heated, but it got a little. It was nice little debate, but I can walk out of that room and not be mad at anybody because I just want to hear. I'd much rather, if you're going to say it, say in that room. Don't save it. Don't walk out of the room and say it. If you're going to say it, say in that room. It is a safe place to debate. So I encourage it. I like it. I think they, by now, I don't get mad. I don't stay mad. We can debate something in the room and 1 minute later, I'm on to a new topic. And I have to be that way because there's so many things we're dealing with that I don't have the energy to stay mad about any one particular topic. We got to move on. I really am intentional and aim to be collaborative. But at the same time, I do have to remind them that the decision falls on my desk and I'm the one that's going to live with it. But at the same time, I'm going to have their back. So if we're debating something and the room is split and we lean one way and I decide this is the way we're going to go. If it fails, I'm not going to say, well, God, y'all gave me bad advice. I'm going to say it's on me. I made the decision. So I will never come back on my staff and say, sure, why did y'all tell me to do this? It's on me. And I live with that. And that's the cost of leadership. And I'm okay with that. So I want to offer that protection to my staff to know that whatever we do decide with, I'll take the fall for it.
How many coaches directly report to you?
I've got 21 sports and 16 head coaches.
And are you the sports supervisor for any of them?
I have a sport admin for each sport.
Okay.
I meet with every single head coach. The level of involvement is a little different sport to sport.
Sure.
But I try to be, I try to have a finger of the pulse of every single program, what's going on.
And how often do you meet with, I get that you probably, you might meet with football more than you do another sport, but on average, how many, you know, are you meeting with every coach every other month, once a quarter?
I generally try to do it, try to work it out to where it's quarterly, but sometimes it'll just work out to like a before the season, after season type thing.
Yeah.
You know, and as I've gotten more settled, I probably don't meet with them individually as much, but they all know that if something comes up, they can get a meeting with me at any time. And then I try to be present at their games and pop in and try to create as much opportunities for talk. So we don't have to just rely on that meeting, but we do a head coaches meeting once a month. And that's another opportunity where I can get some of their time and they can hear the general message from me. But early on, I was doing it frequently and it was just eating up a ton of the time. And it was getting to the point where I didn't want it to be just a mandate that we're looking for something to talk about.
Yeah.
I want to make those meetings more useful. But again, everyone knows, any coach, any administrator knows that or student athlete, they need a meeting with me, they can get it. And then being present at games, as many games as I can, is another way where people can get my time in my ear.
And are you consistent? What's it look like for the sport administrators to report to you? Are they consistently giving you updates, or is it just when something big happens? What's that communication look like?
It's a constant flow for me, because one of the things that's really important to me is the Learfield Cup. Is the, you know, the measurement against which all sports and how we do across the board. So I am constantly in the weeds on how teams are doing and how we're looking and, all right, what do we do? How do we think we're going to finish? What's our projection, seed rank? How we, you know, so I stay pretty involved,
yeah,
knowing the pulse of the programs, because I am, like I said, I'm ultra competitive. So I want to know, like, how are we thinking? What do we think we're going to do? How we got a national indoor, national indoor track meet. We got national swim dive meet. How do we think we're going to do? What do we need to do to get top 10? So I'm always tracking those things.
And I want to get in the weeds here a little bit. When you do your monthly head coaches meeting, would you maybe walk through what a normal or a general itinerary in those meetings would look like?
Yeah. So it's usually monthly, and we do it around lunch. That way we know we have an hour when we feed them, to where we can get, you know, no excuses, get everybody there. We'll go through all the different departments that have something to report out, whether it be academics, compliance, sports medicine, performance health, all those categorical items that any head of those departments that have something to report to the coaches, they'll report out. Sometimes we'll bring in a guest speaker. It could be someone from across campus, arranging topics from Title IX to EOO to campus safety, things like that. And then I'll usually finish it up with a little mini state of the affairs thing, whether it's talking about things happening within the SEC, things happening within the NCAA. As you know, our world is evolving so quickly that,
yep,
we feel like we need to constantly address whatever the new thing is and where it's headed. So that's pretty much the flow, and that usually takes up a little bit over an hour. And then again, that's a chance for me to hang around afterwards, and if I've got some things I need to, I'll try to grab a few of the head coaches and follow up on, you know, any of the things that I know that are going on in their program.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. Thanks for walking us through that. Love to hear hiring process. Obviously I know that each sport is going to be slightly different, but maybe share with us the general principles when you have an opening. What are your general principles when you in your hiring process?
So talking specifically about coaches?
Yes. I'm sorry, for head coaches. Yep.
Yeah. So whenever there's going to be a change, and sometimes it's going to be, I've had some coaches that have retired. I usually pull a small group together. I usually start with my exec staff, which again is a group of six. It's a great number for me to kind of bounce ideas off of, whether we're contemplating a change or whether we know a change is coming. It starts with that. And then once we know, all right, we're going to make a change or a change is coming, from that group, I'll usually pull three or four, depending on who the support administrator is, who's got experience, or who's just actively interested or has the time in their schedule to participate. And usually I'd like to get a group of four or five, and I challenge them with, all right, let's start the pool. Okay, so let's start the pool of names, bring it together, let's bring our list together, and let's start vetting it together. And I've got a list that I always keep for each sport, and then we look at that, and then we'll start narrowing it down. And then the first kind of rule of thumb for me is, if there's any character issues, we cut them off the list right off the bat. Like if there's any cultural fits or instability violation issues, things like that, there's some easy no-goes that we'll cut off the list right away. And then there's got to be a metric of success that will, all right, if we've got a list of 10, there usually is a clear defining line that says, or if a list of 20, we're trying to get 10 or 10 to 8 or 10 to 5. Usually when you lay them all out there, there's a metric of success that you can say, this is, we're University of Georgia. This is the kind of quality candidate we're looking for. And we're blessed to be at Georgia, to where we can traditionally look at either people that have direct experience here or people that have head coaching experience. So then you're narrowing it down to 5, 8 to 10. And then they'll do some unofficial, you know, background information searching on them and kind of really getting in the weeds of them. And then at that point, we'll usually get it to 5 to 6 that we like, that we vetted, that meet the metrics we're looking for. On paper, everything adds up, right? From their background, their history, you know, fit, everything metrically. And then, so at that point, once you get it down to 5, 6, 4, whatever it may be, and the metrics all add up on paper, to me, at that point, when I meet with them, and each search is a little different, so I'm generalizing it a little bit, right?
Sure.
But at that point, when you're down to 4, 5, or 6, for me, the 4, 5, or 6, or whatever the number is, at that point, they all, like I said, they all should meet the metrics on paper.
Mm-hmm.
There shouldn't be anything new at that point that we're finding out about them from a data standpoint. So for me, at that point, it's a gut check. It's a, how do I feel? Do I feel like they're fit? How do I feel? At that point, it's a big feel factor for me.
Yeah.
I've got to rely on my instincts and my gut. I think that's like you asked earlier, what I felt my gift was. I hope that's it. Mm. It's not always going to be 100%. It's not going to be right, but that's what I lean on. Someone I feel like that is going to, that A, that I would want my kids to play for, B, that I can trust, is going to represent Georgia and all they do the right way. That's someone that could be successful, someone that believes in our mission, and you just know it. And usually you know it within minutes of meeting someone, and then you get deeper in that conversation and you're just hopefully validating that feeling. And usually, at that point, one or two stand out. Sometimes it's a tough decision between one and two, but usually what I found is there's usually a couple that separate themselves. And in most situations, one has clearly stood above the others, and then it becomes the matchmaking part of that. Do they want to be here? Do we want, you know, how do we make it work?
Do you generally have search firms helping?
I have. And I like the people search firms, but I like them for more of a background check.
Yep,
check the boxes. I'm hired and fired based on hiring coaches, so I can't put this on search firm. They can help with the process a little bit, you know, setting up the interviews, but not to just for that and background checks specifically.
Do you find that they help, for lack of a better term, turn over maybe some rocks that maybe you're not able just because they have maybe some different connections? Does that ever help?
But I think what they can do is find out if a candidate is really interested or not.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes any human nature, when you're being recruited, whether you're a student athlete or coach, administrator, or whatever, and someone calls you, you're going to be very kind. And it's hard for people to know to that school, that person, that coach, whatever, So people can get led on in a process to think, oh man, I had a great conversation. They're interested. Well, human nature is you don't want to say anything mean to the person on the phone, but I find they'll be way more direct with the search firm.
That's good.
And they'll say, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if I can live there. My family, I'm really happy. They'll give them a lot more honest feedback than they would that person that works at that university. So they can be a real good litmus test to be, hey, be honest. Are they interested or not? Are they trying to play us? Are they trying to get a raise to their current place? Are they halfway interested? Or are they really interested?
Yeah.
So that's where they provide a big help, I think, as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever circumvented the process you just explained because maybe you knew a candidate or maybe you had followed a candidate and you're like,
yeah,
this is the candidate I'm going to go after. Now, I don't know if we're going to land him or not, but this is the one that I really want.
Yeah, I've done that a couple times.
Okay.
There was an easy one for me. You know, I've been very close to the sport of track and field. It's one that I was a sport administrator for coming up through Georgia. So I knew of Carol Smith Gilbert, and I just went after her guns blazing and went and recruited her and landed her. And there was no that, you know, I had the committee, I had my little group doing some checks on other people and having a list, but she was the list from day one. It was the one of one. And I went after her and recruited her and made it my mission to land her. And it's been similar with a few others. I don't want to get too far and make some feel like they weren't recruited harder, sure. But that was an easy one for me because of how close I was at the sport of track and field and the way the timing of that search worked out. I was able to do it. So and sometimes timing plays into the role of that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'd love to maybe hear how you guys do your evaluation process of with coaches. Do you have student athletes give evaluations, sport administrators? Do they collect, like, what's that whole thing look like?
So we do a survey out with our student athletes. It's a pretty comprehensive list that covers all categorical items of things that impact our lives. But part of that will be feedback on the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the challenges, AD, and this is going back to experience at Millsaps, is you've got to be able to filter through the line between, you know, a coach who is doing everything the right way, but maybe a little tough on the kids and filtering through some kids who are just frustrated about playing time to where's that line of we have a problem.
Yeah.
And usually there's a couple questions on there that usually can tell the tale. And one of them is, do I think my coach cares about me? Because kids can normally say they're hard on me, that your practices are tough, blah, blah. But that usually one of those key marker questions is, do I think the coaches care about me? And that can really be an indicator in most times. So we use surveys to basically give us feedback, and then our sport administrators will, you know, collect that data and they'll review with the coach and because it could point out something, whether we're talking about strength conditioning or sports medicine or nutrition, it could point out other issues that we may need to improve within a specific sport. And then there'll be some things that we'll talk to the coach about, whether it's student athlete related or whether it's we need you to be more involved in donor relations or X, Y, Z. And a lot of that will happen independently with the sport administrator. And then I'll have those conversations as well. So, but I'm in lockstep with the sport administrator. So there's no surprises between me and that individual about how we feel about the program or things we need to keep doing, things we need to improve, things we need to stop doing, whatever it may be. So, I feel pretty dialed in at that level. But at the same time, I'm trying to let my sport administrators grow and take responsibility and ownership of their programs. But like I said, I'm pretty, without getting into the weeds too much, I'd like to, I'll steal this term from my buddy Graham Neff at Clemson. I don't like to micromanage, but I do want to be micro-informed.
Yeah.
Of what's going on.
Yeah, that's really good. And you meet with, will you sit down with every coach at the end of the season?
Generally I do. Yeah. I try to set that up. It may not always time up to be right at the end of the season, maybe near it, but
sure.
My admin will usually do a pre and post with every head coach.
Do you hear from parents much? Do you get a lot of parent phone calls?
I don't, it'll happen, you know, once a month, something will come up if it's pretty, pretty serious. I don't discuss playing time. That's one of my rules. That's a non-negotiable. Like that's something I won't talk, but I will be heavily involved if it's a student athlete welfare issue.
Sure.
Because I do believe that the worst thing you could do in the situation is not be accessible. Mm. So I want to be accessible in the situation to where they can at least be heard. Even if I don't agree with them, yeah. Or, you know, look, I've got 550 student athletes. At any given point in time, someone's going to be disgruntled. And it could be either due to playing time. It could be to how they feel like being treated. It could be to a student athlete welfare issue like parking or nutrition or whatever. The biggest thing for me is letting them know they're hurt. Even if I think they're wrong or I think they're coming at it from a bad perspective, hearing them is the key part for me. Because at least if I hear them, we can usually, tamp it down and take the pressure off the valve a little bit to where people, because that's the first step, right? Because we have such a customer service issue in this world today where you have a problem with the business and you can't get a hold of anyone. It just escalates your fury. So if we can at least make sure they know they're being heard, is the first step of that. But depending on the issue, I may or may not involve myself. I've got a great staff that can take the brunt of that because I can't solve every issue at my level all the time. And I need my staff to be able to be boots on the ground for a lot of these issues.
Yeah. Dude, as you talked over the last little bit, I think one thing that I hear stirring up consistently to maybe encourage you, you have a ton of emotional intelligence and feel for people and relationships.
Well, I appreciate that. One thing that I've had to learn, and I hope I'm getting better at it, is, and I was actually having this discussion with my cousin a couple months ago, and we were talking about emotional intelligence. And he said it, and he put it in context for me that made a lot of sense. He goes, the next step for you is accepting the fact that you're not going to be able to change everybody and make them just like you or agree with you.
Yeah.
And that's the next step, is that being like, I'm not going to win every argument, do the best I can, and then I got to let it go at some point. At some point, I got to not give up, but I'm not going to convince, even when they're blatantly wrong and they're seeing it from a different perspective. At some point, you have to give up and just, you've done your best and in the debate. Because you're just wasting energy at some point. And that's tough for me.
Dude, no doubt. Well, I think that is the, you know, every gold has a shadow. And people that are wired for people that are good with people that care about people and they can read them, it's great. It's obviously a huge gold. But the shadow to that is it's like they care too much. So it impacts them when they're not happy with you or whatever. So yeah, I think that is probably for all people is to, can I be okay with this person not totally okay with me? Can I lay my head down at night and be okay that maybe they're a little mad at me right now?
That's different. And I'm getting much better at that. I had a fan. I wouldn't even call them a donor. I don't know if they were a donor. They were a fan that called up the main line and was complaining about something. And I said, I'm going to call them back just to have fun, you know, just talk to them. And I tried to reason with them and they wound up hanging up on me. Hmm. And, you know, what am I going to do? Like that guy, just, he was dead set on having a bad day. So I can tell the story about it, but it's not going to, I can't let it bother me. Like that guy's, I have no idea what's going on in that guy's life right now.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. I end with three questions, Josh. The first one is, what are you currently reading or listening to that's, as you mentioned, continuing to help you grow?
So I've listened to this podcast before, but I just dug back into it and I'm going to start going through it again because I think I'm outdated on some of the episodes. Is Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History.
Yeah.
That's a podcast I really enjoy. And then I just got a book as a gift from Desiree Reed Francois, who sent it to me. It's called Outlive, The Science and Art of Longevity. So I'm going to start. That's the new book that I just started reading.
Is that the Peter Attia book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a great quote that I'm going to butcher at the beginning of the book that talks about at some point, and I'm going to butcher the quote, but it says, at some point, we have to stop pulling people out of the river and we have to go upstream and find out why they're falling in.
I love it.
And that, I can't get that quote out of my head, like of just thinking of what that means of like, you know, the root of the problem versus just, you know, treating the symptoms how do we keep people falling in? And I think that just is sticking me right now. It's stuck in my head. So I'm excited to read this book and take more, hopefully, nuggets like that from it.
Love it. Dude, that quote, I think, can apply to almost every area of life, specifically for health. But I just think of like marriage and parenting and leadership.
Parenting. Yeah. I mean, you know,
get to the root and not deal with the surface level stuff. Okay. Second question I ask is, what advice would you give a young person just getting into athletic administration?
I'm going to give advice of something that I did not take of myself. So this is one of those do as I say and not as I do advice that as we get older, we get famous for, but patience, 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 patience. We want it all to happen right now.
Yeah.
And you have to stay aggressive and you have to stay assertive, but you got to pick your battles. You can't be on the hunt for a promotion every day. You can't be on a hunt for a raise every day. At some point, you've got to just... And it's not being complacent. See, people sometimes view that as being complacent. It's not complacent. So it's just be happy where you're at for a little bit. There'll be a time to push for the next job, the next promotion, the next raise. But it's not, you got to pause and get really good at what you're doing right now. You know, just bloom where you're planted. Be really, really good. Get so good at what you're doing right now that they say to you, what's the next thing you could do? If you're really good at what you do, people are going to come ask you for more. And then also, and this is counterintuitive to the way the society is starting to get programmed right now, and this is an old school, old man talking here, but go search out more to do without asking for a raise. Mm. And I know that's very controversial right now because it's, you know, but that's all I know to tell you because that's how I did it, you know? Whether we were planning an event and I told Greg, hey, let me help plan that. Let me be part of that. Hey, let me help with this. Let me help with this. Seek out more. Seek out to do more. And don't always ask what's in it for me. Because if you believe that, it will come. You know, look, I fundamentally believe that, you know, in life, I'm getting paid more than I ever have in my life to do. I have a lot more stress, a lot on my shoulders. But I have more people doing things for me than ever before. But I told you about when I was making $20,000 a year, old Lobster Monroe, your joy will not be any different than it was in, you know, 20 plus years ago than it is today.
Yep.
So enjoy the journey, enjoy the process, enjoy what you're doing right now. Get really good at it. Good things will happen. Be patient.
Mm. Yeah. It reminds me, there's a guy named Naval Ravikant who wrote a book he puts out some tweets, and one of his tweets he put out was, be impatient with action and patient with results. And so to your point on this, you know, this idea of being content versus, what was the other word you used? I'm drawing a blank.
Complacent.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's a difference. Complacency is not good. Patient contentment with where you're at can actually be a good thing. As long as it doesn't slide into complacency. So yeah, anyways, I love that. It's great stuff.
And the other piece is chess, not checkers.
Mm.
Too many times people think linearly about the decisions they're making of their journey, their path. It's like, are you playing chess or checkers? Because a checkers player is only worried about the next promotion, the next raise, and they want every move they make to be a better move, to better where they're at. But a chess player will take a step backwards in order to win the match. I mean, and look, I got lucky, things worked out for me, but I had people think I was a fool for leaving to go to Millsaps. Yeah. But for me, it was a chess move. I had to learn. I had to grow. I took a pay cut to go to Millsaps. But it was all a part of a bigger plan, and it could have not worked out, and I'm lucky that it did, but it was a calculated risk of a chess move that I took that I didn't just think linearly of, well, I've got it. The next move has got to be for more money and a better title. you know.
Yeah, dude, that's so good. I love that. Okay, last question, and I'll end with this. Who would you love to hear walk through their journey and talk about, you know, their hiring process and how they navigate and lead their executive team and all things leadership?
You know, and this is one I probably should personally just hit up and spend the time to talk to, is Kevin White. And I'm sure there's probably great pod, there's probably already an interview with him that I probably missed, but I think he's one that this type of podcast would be great to hear him. I've gotten to know, obviously, his son, Mike, who's our basketball coach. I've gotten to know his other son, Danny, who is a colleague in the SEC. But it's been fun to get to know him a little bit through him just coming around. But here's a guy who's, you know, did it for a long time at a high level at many schools, did it at big schools, small schools. I think his experience would be useful to learn from.
Love it. Well, Josh, dude, thanks for your time. I know you're busy today. You guys got the NIT championship. So yeah, I appreciate you taking out some time. I've heard many great things about you. And so yeah, it was great to visit and good to learn from you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.